Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un sausage burrito es solo $1.50. Así que échale salsa picante o ketchup a tu sausage burrito con todo en McDonald's. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Good for Construction, a podcast dedicated to architects and architecture in India. And I'm your host, Isha Bajaj. In season one, we talk to architects across India who are now successfully running their own enterprises and companies. We talk to them about their journeys of the transition from architecture school to getting a job and finally starting their own business. And today in studio, we have Sanjana Mathur of Studio Bipolar. To give our listeners a little context, Studio Bipolar, established in 2016, is a firm focused on creating spaces that are functional and visually impactful. Their designs blur the lines between art and architecture. At Studio Bipolar, they believe to draw from a company's or person's core values to develop their design concepts. The founders, Sanjana Mathur and Ujjwal Sagar, completed their Bachelor's of Architecture from Sushant School of Art and Architecture, Gurgaon. Hi, Sanjana.
Hi.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, let's start about your journey, like how Studio Bipolar came into existence.
So, right now, we started in like late 2016. Me and my partner, Ujjwal, we'd both been working at Anagram Architects in Delhi with Madhav Raman and Vaibhav Dimri. So, we were just considering our next step, you know, because I'd been working there for a while and we were wondering what should we do next. Should we move on to a new job or should we keep working here? And then at that stage, you know, someone contacted me with a contractor I knew who said that, you know, I have this client and he wants to make a cafe in New Friends Colony and, right. You know, would you want to do it?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, right. So honestly speaking, at that stage, like I literally had no idea what I wanted to do with my life because in my head, I had this plan that I'll graduate college, I'll work at this firm and great firm, right? So, right. And I worked with great people, great work. And I thought that, you know, after that, I'd go to grad school.
Yeah.
But that didn't work out. I was depressed. I was like, I literally don't know what I have to do in my life because yeah. I'm that kind of person who makes a lot of plans and I have lists for everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my head, it was very sorted.
Yeah.
And then when it didn't happen, I was kind of lost.
Right.
So, and then this project came in, this potential client, and I was like, okay, let's try this. And my partner, Ujjwal, he's the kind of guy who wanted to start something on his own and he always knew and he kind of jumped on it because, you know, he was like, this is our chance, you know, let's do it.
Right.
So, I guess starting the firm was essentially his idea. And I just got roped into it because I was like, okay, I guess we can do it. Like, what's stopping me? Not going to grad school anymore. So
why Studio Bipolar? Like, why this name?
Yeah, so the thing was that, you know, we didn't think that we would actually get any more projects. So we were just like, let's start this and, you know, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And we were sitting one day and we were, you know, talking about what we like and, you know, so as people, we are like completely like polar opposites. You know, if I'm like that person who's always making lists and is super organized and everything, he is that person who's completely disorganized and he scribbles in like 100 notebooks at once. So we're completely like polar opposite people and we have completely different styles of design as well. But somehow we always managed to agree on a design that had different elements and it worked out well. It was a good, it's a good partnership. So we were just like, you know, what defines us?
Pulls apart.
Yeah, pulls apart. And so the name Studio Bipolar was born and we didn't think anyone would actually hear about it.
Yeah.
But now it's, you know, now we've got company deeds and everything. Yeah. So and a bank account in that name. So I guess we're stuck with it. But we like it because, you know, people remember it.
Yeah, it's true. It's it's a very different, very unique kind of name. And honestly, it makes you feel like curious about it.
Yeah, like people ask us, you know, what is the idea behind the name? And when they meet us, they're like, oh, okay, I get it.
At least I feel like it's a great conversation starter.
It is. It is. Definitely.
So tell me a little bit more about you and Ujjwal and your partnership. How far back does it go in terms of professional work and collaboration?
So, you know, we actually know each other from college. We were batchmates and, you know, it turned out that we had a few common friends and everything. So generally, you know, we were friends and it worked out like that. And then we landed up somehow after internship working in the same firm.
Right.
So generally, it's like we were meeting every day and we were having discussions on design and we were working on the same project. Right. So we had some, you know, sort of a rapport building
going
in terms
on,
of design.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, when that project came and the contractor approached me, I just asked him, would you be interested in doing it? Because I didn't want want to do it alone.
Right.
So, and it just worked out from there. So we complement each other. Mm. So I'm that person who sort of gets panic attacks very easily. Like if a client says, no, I hate it. And you know, you're terrible architects. Yeah. I lose it. I'm just oh my God.
And it's the end of the
world. Yeah, it's the end of the world. And he's, okay, just relax. Okay, don't take it so literally. He's just saying he doesn't like the design. He's not saying he doesn't like you. So, you know, we complement each other and, you know, we bring out the best in each other as architects. So it's a good partnership. And so after that first project, we're just like, okay, you know, let's see what happens next.
Nice. So you mentioned that you guys are completely opposite when it comes to even design.
Yeah.
So how do you guys make that work at Studio Bipolo? Did you divide your responsibilities or how does it work?
Somehow we managed to figure out design together.
Gotcha.
So I think that is something that both of us, because we don't want to be like, you know, we've tried that, okay, you take lead on this project and you take lead on that project.
Right.
But left to ourselves, we have a habit of going too extreme in one direction. And there needs to be a balance, you know. So you bring out that balance to a design. And so working together, we sort of have something that's edgy and it's eye-catching, but at the same time, it's functional and subtle and at places.
Yeah.
So design-wise, it works out. And then in terms of the other responsibilities that come with a firm, so we have, recently we've decided that, okay, you know, you have to divide up the things, you know.
Right.
So he handles things like the business side of things, like the accounts and the financials and running after payments and all of that. And I handle the more, you know, managing the projects and making sure deadlines are met and things like that.
Right.
But this is like a recent development. Before that, it's like, okay, this is your project. You handle everything to do with that.
Yeah.
And this is my project. You handle everything to do with this. But it's not fair to sort of expect one person to do everything, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's not, sometimes it's not their strength and they don't want to do it.
Right.
So now
we're tapping into each other's strengths and it's more of like a collaboration on every project.
Yeah. So now it's like better because, you know, I don't have to stress about, because I can't ask people for money. I hate talking about money. Like Ujjal has to run after me.
Yeah.
Like he used to run after me like, okay, you need to ask them for money now. It's been like 6 months. We haven't been paid.
So when you guys decided and to start Studio Bipolo, you decided to leave your jobs.
Mm-hmm.
How much experience did you have in terms of working for another firm?
I think I had 1.5 years. Both of us had like 1.5 years experience.
Achha.
So like I said, you know, at that time, we didn't think it was actually going to be a firm. We were just like, maybe this will be a break. And then, you know, I'll go back to doing another job or something. You know, like I'll do this cafe, figure out what I like, and then I can go back. So it just so happened that we got a project right after that. So we were just like, okay, let's go ahead with this.
Right. So, do you think there's like a given time or there are a few checkboxes that need to be ticked before you venture out into your own?
So the thing is that, you know, there are two kinds of work that you get. You know, one is the work that you get when you're an employee.
Yeah.
And the other is the kind of work that you get to do only when you're a boss.
Right.
You know, so the kind of work that you get to do as an employee, you know, it's stuff like, you know, managing a project, beating deadlines, you know, churning out designs. So that is something that you can always do, you know, whether you have experience or not, you learn on the job, right? Even if you're working a job, you learn.
Right.
Obviously, you have someone there to guide you and a team to back you up.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's easier.
Hmm.
But even if you're doing your own thing, you figure it out. You know, it takes you a few projects. It takes you a little more time, but you figure it out. But the boss side of things, like, you know, finding new clients, networking, pitching to people, that is something that you might not necessarily do as an employee.
Yeah.
And that is something it's always great if you start doing that kind of work early on, because you know, the more experience you have, the better you get. And that is something I think that we initially had a lot of trouble with, because when you've just transitioned from being an employee to being, you know, like someone
literally on
your own, then you have to figure out what is it that clients want, you know, and you have to use like a considerable amount of psychology. So I think the first 6 months of working, I think I must have gone in for like 100 pitches and maybe just converted like barely like 5 or something, you know.
Wow.
So, I mean, but that's the kind of thing. So I think when I finally went into one pitch and then my design and my cost estimate got approved in like the first, in like 1 hour, I was just like, okay, like,
thank God,
I've arrived. This is my moment. You know, so you start getting the hang of that kind of stuff. And that's really important.
Gotcha.
You know,
so interesting that you mentioned that you went for 100 and you got maybe 5 out of it. How did you, I mean, I don't want to call it like failure, but when you're in that position, it feels like, you know, you failed, like something has gone wrong, you know, because I mean, I think everyone who's an architect or is becoming an architect would kind of resonate with this and understand where I'm coming from, because even if you're standing for a jury and the juror does not mm-hmm. agree with what you're saying, it feels like this entire process was just a failure, you know? What have you done? So my question is that how did you deal with these small things that didn't work out? And generally, your like attitude towards when things didn't work out, how did you deal with it?
So, you know, I completely identify with that because I was that person who used to cry after juries if it didn't go well. Yeah. You know, that one person in the batch who does that, I was that person. So, yeah. So for the first 5-10 pitches, I was like, oh, shit, you know, they didn't like it. And then, you know, then it's the natural thing that, you know, okay, let me do it again. Let me come back with another pitch. Yeah. But the thing is that sometimes you just don't get what the client wants. Sometimes they want something completely different. It's not a design that you want to do.
Hmm.
So after the first 10-20 pitches, you just sort of make your peace with it. And you're just like, okay, I'm not going to kill myself.
Hmm.
You have to do something that resonates with you as a good designer.
Yeah.
And you do what something that comes naturally to you. You know, if they're not liking it, they're not liking it. It doesn't mean that you're a bad designer. It just means that they want something else.
There's no match. I mean,
yeah,
it's
it has
not
nothing
setting,
to do with you. Yeah. You know, for I mean, there can be like a variety of reasons they've decided to say no.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it can be like they don't like the design. There can be like so many reasons, and it's just not something that you take personally. You just leave it and move on.
So, how much time did you take to say that? Okay, fine. Listen, this is separate from me as a person, and I will not take this personally.
After the first 10-15 pitches, which didn't go well, I was just like, okay, I'm immune now. You just, it's experience, you know, you just have, it's trial and error. You just, you know, dhakke maarke, you have to
kind of
you, just get over it.
You get like thick
you
skin.
Get over it. The more pitches you do, the more you fail, the more you just sort of become immune to it. And you're just like, okay.
Yeah.
I know there'll be times when you really, really want a project and you really want it to work out and you really like the people. But you know, the thing is that even if in your head you sort of build it up to be this amazing project, it's never going to be like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's, at the end of the day, it's a regular project. It's a regular client. They're going to be ups and downs.
Hmm.
Sometimes they're going to be mad at you. Sometimes you're going to be mad at them. Sometimes you'll make the wrong decision. Sometimes the project won't go well. They'll get a shitty contractor. Something or the other will happen. It'll be a regular project. So you as a designer, you are separate. The project is separate.
Hmm.
Keep it like that. Just keep it professional. Keep it cool and calm. Don't get so overconnected. I do that. I get very overconnected. And
I think a lot of people do that. I mean, not everyone, I understand that. Some people are just, they just know inherently that, okay, fine, you know, this is separate. I am separate from my work. So they don't get so affected by it. But I totally understand where you're coming from. You know, you get so involved in the process.
Yeah, and then, you know, I feel bad. Like, you know, I have this one client who they've been trying to move into their house. And for whatever reason, there have been construction delays and things like that. They haven't been able to.
Hmm.
And I feel so bad because all of my work is done. So technically, I should get out of it and let them finish it. But, you know, it's not happening. And I don't want to just leave them, you know. Because, because I do want to see the project till the end.
Yeah.
You know,
that
I want...
Really.
Yeah, so I'm just like, okay, you know, the decent people and so that's my thing, but it's a small project, so I can afford to do that.
Yeah.
But in a bigger project, I might not be able to. So you have to sort of, I think, pick and choose which situation you want to be nice and which situation, you know, you want to sort of...
Like maintain your distance.
Yeah, maintain your distance. Yeah. But yeah, so these clients, I really like them. So I'm just like, it's okay, you know.
Do you want to give them a shout out? Hey guys, I love
you. Hey guys, I'm coming to your site after this. So
tell me, how is day one at Studio Bipolar? When you were one project down and you had done all the paperwork and it was established that, okay, Studio Bipolar is a legitimate company or firm or whatever you want to
call
it.
Okay, so none of that happened on day one.
Okay.
Day one was basically me and my laptop in my bedroom on my study desk.
Yeah.
Like 3D modeling. That was day one. And then it was like perhaps day like 75 when we were like, when I got sick of my bedroom and I went into a co-working.
Yeah.
And it was perhaps day 360 or something when we finally got all our paperwork in order. So yeah, none of that happens all at once, and it would be great if it did. And obviously if someone's out there thinking of starting their own firm, then get your paperwork in order, get your bank accounts in order, find a CA,
right,
you know, get all that stuff done, and then start working, because getting it done while you're working is a pain. And
so when you were working, did you do something special to, you know, make yourself feel like this is my work, like nobody else will be held accountable for this, it's just me and Ujjwal? Did you do something differently?
I tried to, but you know, the thing is that working out of your house is, working out of your bedroom is really hard, because you can't, it's very hard to get into that
zone.
Work mode, right?
Yeah, yeah.
My cat used to come and used to lie down on my laptop. up and stupid shit like that. And, you know, then it's like, achha, hato, let me, I'm working. So, you know, obviously, so we did like, I think 2-3 months of that and you were just like, okay, ye nahi ho raha. Yeah, we used to like, our mainstay was we used to go to Chayos. In Achha. SDA market
Achha.
And work there because they have free Wi-Fi and, you know, good food. And
yeah.
So that is actually like, that is my first office.
Yeah.
Chayos and Chayos. SDA market. So yay. Thank you, Chayos. And I've spent like many, many hours there. Mm-hmm. And then finally, we're just like, okay, this isn't working. And, you know, we need like our own space and we need to get into the proper zone. So
so was Shapurjar your office? I mean, was that the co-working space?
Yeah,
your first
yeah.
Co-working
so
space?
Shapurjar, so I think SoDelhi had just started their first co-working space called yeah. SoShare. So they just started it. And I think we were one of the first customers. And we went with that because it was like, it fitted our pocket, basically.
Yeah.
It was like the best thing that we could find. Huh. It was clean and, you know, friendly and yeah. everything. And it's in a good location.
Yeah.
So, you know, Shapurjar is very well located. So we were there for, I think, 6 months. And then, you know, so the thing is like, as architects, you collect a lot of samples and stuff, right? In a co-working, you don't necessarily get a lot of space to store it.
Right.
So we were outgrowing our space.
Right.
And, you know, so then we moved in to a flat share, which one of our seniors was doing. He had that. And we worked there for another 6 months.
Yeah.
And then finally, we'd saved up enough money to get our own space. And
yeah.
I actually did the maths. I remember doing the maths. I was like, okay, so even if we don't get paid anything for the next 6 months, I can still cover rent.
That's brilliant.
Because we need to, I was like, I'm only going to do this. So Ujjal had been pushing me. We were like, we need our own space. We need our own space. I was like saying, no, we can't take a risk. It's a huge risk. And,
yeah.
You know, but then I did the math. I was like, only if we have enough rent to cover 6 months of rent and, you know, all of that,
yeah.
then we'll do it.
Yeah.
You know, so even if nothing comes in, like, I know in my head, it'll work out.
It'll work out. So going from there, let's talk about investment. So when you started, did you do like a market study to see the rates and check how much is the average investment mm-hmm. financially? How did you figure out how much to invest?
So, you know, I had my laptop, which I'd had like since my college days,
yeah.
you know, and that was my yeah. system for like a year
Achha.
Into the thing. And, you know, we didn't have the money to get anything more.
Hmm.
And I think Ujjal had saved us some money. So his laptop was like, God bless him, rest in peace. And
that bad, huh?
Yeah, that bad. And so he had saved us some money with you know, his salaries and stuff, so he invested in a proper system, you know. So yeah, so it was basically stuff that we had saved, and we were very like, strict about that because he was like, I don't want to take anything from my parents. You know, he didn't want to take anything from his parents. I didn't want to take anything from my parents.
Okay.
So
how much do you think, in your opinion, any person who is out there trying to start their own firm, what would be like a basic ballpark to have as save or flowing money to just spend to start their own work?
I think honestly, like in the beginning, you need to be asset conscious. You know, in the beginning, it's not absolutely necessary to have like a space. You know, what's more important is that you focus on your work. So if you have like a clean space, like even if it's one tiny room in your house where you can just set up a desk and work without being disturbed, then that is enough.
Achha.
You know, so that's what we did. Like, we worked and then we got paid for our first project, so then we had some money. You know, and then we invested in like a co-working desk, you know.
Okay.
And then it's, so it was always like a step-by-step process, you know. So you can't like from day one, if you're going to take on investment and, you know, take money from friends and family and things like that, like obviously you want like that whole office and that whole setup and you want to do that, but we didn't want to do that. We were just like, it's not necessary because right now we don't have that many clients,
right?
And you know, we don't have that many projects. We don't need that.
Yeah.
You know, and we were just like, let's build it up. And you know, so I guess we've done zero investment, but whatever we've got, we've earned and we've saved over the last 2 years. So now it's like it's taken us, I guess 2 years to reach a point where we have our own space. We've got our own furniture, like custom designed furniture.
Yeah.
And we've got like a place where we can actually call clients.
Yeah. Also, it's a lovely office, guys. I mean, you have to see pictures. It's beautiful. I mean, it's beautifully done, very tastefully done.
Yes.
So where did you source your team from?
So I guess the first project, like the contractor had approached me himself. So the client had known him. So he was like, I'll do all the work. But then other vendors, like, you know, I think some vendors, we sourced ourselves, like, you know, for tiles, for example, we went to Keetinagar one day and we spent a whole day looking.
Yeah.
And then some vendors we took from, you know, our past experience at Anagram and our previous firms.
Right.
and then from through reference and things like that. So I guess that's a good part about, you know, having a strong network of architects. Like all of our friends are architects.
Yeah.
So it's like you can literally like, and we and it's not like, but then most people for the most part, they're just like, oh, okay, no problem. You want this person, let me send you the number.
So how did you do the quality check? I mean, for people who you didn't know and you know, you so how did you do a background check for them, for their work?
So so one is, of course, you know, you see their rates. Like if you have a BOQ, you ask them, like, you know, show me your rates, show me what kind of specifications you're using. That's a good indicator, you know. So if he's saying that, you know, I'm using, you know, like this kind of material and I'm giving you this kind of rate and this kind of quality I'm assuring you, then okay, that, I mean, after a point, it's just like you have to just trust the guy that he's going to do what he says he's doing. And then obviously you know, you see photographs, you go to some past completed site, you see how it's held up, you know, you sort of say that, okay, this is 2 years old, he did this 2 years ago, okay, fine, so it's looking like decent for the amount of decay that's going to happen. So I guess after a point, it's just, you just have to take a leap, you know.
Leap of faith.
Yeah, leap of faith. Obviously, when you're dealing with someone who's more experienced and, you know, you've heard of them from various vendors, and there's some, like, level of faith that, okay, this guy will deliver. But it's still a leap of faith.
Now, let's come down to clients. And again, without taking any names, I've come to learn about the fact people approach projects in a very different way. You know, some see it as a collaboration between, if they're partners, and two partners. If it's a single person, then a collaboration between that single person and their team, or that single person and the client. Do you consider your clients as potential collaborators, or do you first take in their, how they envision a space, and then give it your touch?
So I think, you know, every project is different, every client is different, so you have a different relation with everyone.
Okay.
So actually, I think the problem is that most clients can't visualize, you know. So if you're saying that I'll make something like this and you show them a reference image, they're not able to visualize it,
right?
So with the designers, the designer clients of mine, it's more of a collaboration, right? Because you know, they have a vision already, and you're just helping them sort of make sure that it comes onto ground on site.
Right.
You know, because all the technical knowledge that they don't have, I'm supplementing, but it's more of their vision. I'm just facilitating it.
Okay.
Then there are clients who are like, you know, this is what I want. This is the kind of look and feel. That is more of them sort of making sure that their vision is being met, and us just sort of detailing out every single little bit. So it's kind, it's like a collaboration, but we do have a free hand to some extent.
So you guys just mold yourself accordingly.
According to the client, because, you know, like, I guess maybe some people are just like, no, it'll happen this way and everything, but you can't do that, because, you know, you have to be flexible, you know, because every person is different, and at the end of the day, the client has to feel comfortable. Customer is God. I never thought I'd say this, but
you shifted onto the dark side now.
Actually, you know, honestly speaking, I feel that architects are sometimes, this is just a generalization, so I hope I don't offend people, but I probably will, but I'm saying it anyway. I feel generally sometimes architects can be a bit arrogant, you know. They're just like, this is my design, this is how it's going to be done, that's it, right?
True.
Sometimes, like, a client says he wants something, but he actually means something else.
Yeah.
So as an architect, you have to actually look at the guy and be like, "Acha, ye bol to raha hai ki mujhe ye chahiye," but he actually means something else.
Yeah.
You know, so that's like a considerable amount of psychology goes into that, and sort of analyzing, where is this person coming from, who is he, what has he done with his life, and
so now are you comfortable with reading a person like
that? To some extent, you know. So what I'm saying is that architects are arrogant, but sometimes I feel they're needlessly arrogant, you know, because sometimes clients aren't stupid.
Yeah.
You know, because now in the age of Instagram and Pinterest, like, clients are getting more and more aware.
Absolutely.
You know, and you have to sort of give them the credit that they know what they want to some extent. Not all clients, but a lot of clients do know what they want. They're well-traveled, they're well-spoken people, and they know what they want. They've been all around the world, they've seen it. You know, and sometimes they'll know more than you.
Absolutely. You know, I think in terms of money matters and, like, fixtures and all, and this is coming from whatever people I've spoken to, and they've expressed that, you know, I think with architecture, when you're building something like a building or your house, or, you know, and even if it's like a cafe, I feel that the people who are building it, who are doing it for personal reasons, they collect their money over a really long time, you know, it's like a lifelong collection of money. And then when they're about to spend it, I think they do more thorough research when it comes to like fixtures and money and spending than, you know, the architect, I think, who's
and I've had this, you know, conversation with a lot of people. So I think just about 2 weeks ago, I was sitting and I was talking to someone who's just started a co-working space. So now the whole co-working concept, it's really doing well in Delhi and Gurgaon, but in Faridabad, it's relatively new concept.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they hired an architect. So the architect was saying that, you know, make these open breakout areas and, you know, the cubicle, the team rooms, like they're not really cubicles, they're not sealed or anything, but it's like basically a semi-enclosed space. And, you know, the owner was saying that, you know, it all looks great and everything, but I can't sell it because people in Faridabad just don't understand you know, what the concept of a semi-enclosed team room is. Like, according to them, if they're buying a team room, it needs to be sealed so that people can't hear.
Yeah.
They said that, you know, we've told this guy like a million times that this is Faridabad. It's a different kind of clientele. You need to understand. You need to listen to us. He was just like, no, I'm an architect. This is my design. Yehi aapke liye best hai. And so, you know, you have community tables. They're all lying empty in that co-working because no one understands the concept of a community open hot desking thing. So they're actually losing out on a lot of money because you know, so those are the kind of situations where, you know, you have to have an open mind and be like, okay, you know, what is this guy, what is the client saying, does it have merit, could I be wrong? You have to have an open mind.
Yeah, that's true, that's true. I think we should now talk about your style because it's a very interesting thing, bipolar style. Like, I've come to notice, actually connect your work, Studio Bipolar, with arches. Like lots and lots and lots of beautiful arches.
Yeah.
So how did you guys, like you and Ujjwal, how did you develop this style, or did it gradually evolve into this? And there's a lot of like pop colors and you know, it's very definitely very tastefully done, but it's got this zing to it, which makes the space feel very lively and you know, you want to go to the space.
So I think, I mean, I think that was, there was this one day I remember when we were, I think, about 2 months into designing our first project, and we were discussing, okay, what is it that we like, and what is it that we want to do, and both of us, you know, so we, what we did was, we were like, okay, look at this table, and it was like a shitty 60s era table, you know, which had been in my family for like God knows how long, and we were like, if we had to change this table, what would we do to it? And we just started coming up with ideas. We were just like, you know, we would change the material, we would add, you know, maybe brass, or we would do something this, and basically we did that for every piece of furniture in my, in that room. And at the end of the day, what we realized was that we really like materiality. We really like adding, like, you know, accents of, you know, standout materials and adding elements which really add, like you said, a punch to the space. So it's almost as if when you walk into a space, it should look like it's a piece of art. But it should still be functional and it should still be appealing and it shouldn't be like it's overpowering the whole space. You know, so for Esquire, I mean, the brief was like our Esquire office was that he wants something that will just blow away people. And it's really strange because we made that 3D and that whole pitch, like, for the pitch, right? We never make 3Ds for pitches. So we made that 3D, like, exactly what it is. And we went in for the meeting and he loved it. And as it was. And what has come out on site is literally like a mirror image of what we had made.
That's
in that
like super duper success.
So that was like, that's like one in a million. Like, that never happens. Right? So I think that works for us. That we really like creating spaces that are almost merging art and architecture, that are almost looking at it in a very graphic, very impactful way. And a lot of people, what I've realized is that, you know, the kind of people we're working with so far, they're all young startups, you know, or they're like established companies, but they're young people, you know, they're like below 35 mostly. And they want places where they can sort of take a selfie almost. They want Instagrammable places. They want places where they can, you know, Snapchat something. And I don't think people are paying attention to that part as much. But that's like, I mean, people pay attention when it's like a cafe or something. But even in a workspace, people want that. Because the boundaries between living and working are all merging now. So
it's true.
It's
true.
Really important to sort of bear that in mind. That you can't just make like a boring workspace anymore.
Yeah, and it also has effect on the way you work and your efficiency, right? I mean, there's this whole dialogue coming in where they're now criticizing the workspaces, like the cubicles in MNC offices and this and that, and how just adding a little color and a little, you know, some kind of hue or something into the space kind of, you know, it brightens up your mood and it wants you to kind of, you want to go back to that space again and again.
And like, I think people need to figure out a balance because it's important to have those kind of spaces in office, like a quiet zone where people can just, you know, buckle down and work.
Yeah.
But it's also important to have people where, like, a space where people can break out.
Yeah.
So in a white balance office, like, we have two large halls. One hall is just for working. One hall is like a multi-purpose hall. So they can have meetings there. They can have events. And that has, like, all the major, like, impactful artwork. Right? The artwork in the other hall is mostly like a backdrop. You know, it's not very overpowering or anything. And that was done with, like, a logic in mind that, you know, you can't have something that's so distracting in, like, the place where people are meant to work.
Right.
But it's all seamlessly connected so that people can still do whatever they have to do, break out when they need to, rest when they need to, sleep when they need to. And it's not interfering with anyone else's thing. So it's all about keeping that balance in mind.
So have your clients, after they've occupied a space, have they come up to you and said that, you know, maybe, for example, if it's an office and you've done these crazy accents in this space, that people have become more efficient or happier to come to work?
Yeah, so what happens, what's happened, I think, in all of our projects so far is that, especially the workspaces, is that during... while it's happening, they're very stressed, right? Because construction is a very stressful project. Like, you know, they're like stressed. Oh, ye khatam nahi hoga, wo khatam nahi hoga. And they're like, oh, this is taking so much money. Ye to over budget ja raha hai, all of that. So while it's happening, they're not very happy with you.
Yeah.
When you check in like 3 months down the line, and, you know, people have been there and they've seen it, they're like, oh, it's looking so nice. And, you know, oh, they couldn't believe that you completed all this in 3 months. And, you know, we only spend this much money. People aren't believing that. I'm like, yes. Yes.
Now you appreciate
that's what we were trying to tell you. So I think that's generally like, you know, it's kind of sad, but in the market, like generally among people who aren't architects, there's like a huge... like, there's not much awareness about how much construction costs and what kind of time it takes. And, you know, like, that's what I sort of figured out when we were doing, like, all those hundreds, like hundreds of pitches. That people have a very unrealistic idea about what they can do in their space and how much it's going to cost. I have, like, a few clients who are builders, but obviously those people will know how much time it's going to take.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but among the people who are doing it for the first time, like, renovating the house for the first time or renovating, like, an office, they don't have any idea.
The arches, I'm very curious where the arches come from. Like, where did, what was the origin of using the arches?
So actually, there's no, actually you're right. You know, I'm thinking about this for the first time, but we have used a lot of arches. it just sort of comes out organically, I guess. I think like with Esquire, which is our first project, the origins of the magazine, Esquire magazine, was it started in the Art Deco era.
Oh,
so the whole archwala motif came from that, you know, and those semicircles and like all of that, it came from that. And then like white balance, where we converted like an old archway. So I guess we were just really liking, like graphically, it sort of worked out very well, you know. And
it defines the space in a very different way.
I guess because there were a lot of like flat arches in the space and we were just like, what would, like what looks nice in like this industrial raw kind of space and how should we do it? And because there were already like so many like rectangles in the whole space, so we needed to add some curves to sort of soften it up. You know, so that was like, I guess, the natural thing that came to us. And we're using it in another project, but that hasn't been published yet. So hopefully it'll come out in a year when the arch thing is not that prominent in our work.
Do you have a plan on modifying the arch now? Or maybe a new element that
So I guess with us, it's like we've done the arch in like very different ways, you know, each time, you know. So one, it was just like a thin metal arch in Esquire, which is just like a thin metal member. And then in white balance, it's like, you know, this raw white brick sort of facade in which there's a puncture in the shape of an arch. And then in another residential project, we're doing like a very, you know, ornate wood carved Victorian kind of archway, you know, with all these ornate florals and everything. So it's going to be a very different take. So maybe we can do like an Instagram post at all at the end of all of this, like different kind of arches. Arches of bipolar.
You should. I think that's going to be like a very interesting thing. And, you know, I mean, as a third person who's been, you know, following your journey for a while now, when you, when someone mentions Studio Bipolar, those pink and black and white lines come in my mind, and those arches, I think that's enough to get me excited about a space.
Oh, that's cool. People mention us.
I just
got fixated on that, like someone mentioned us. Someone's actually watching us on Instagram.
yeah, that's how I kind of relate to studio's work.
Yeah, and so that's good feedback for us.
Yes. Like, going back to when you guys started, your first project came through somebody you knew. But how did you get the later projects, and how do you generally make sure that you keep getting projects? Is it word of mouth? Is it like you've done so many pitches? Was it through that? Like, where does a major chunk of your project, where did they come from?
So I guess in the beginning, it was just word of mouth, you know, from a contractor, from a friend, family, something like that. And been very lucky. Our ex-bosses over at Anagram, they've been really good to us. So I think they've actually passed on the word. So sometimes, you know, they get an inquiry for a project, they
can't
do it.
That's very sweet.
Yeah, and they've passed on our name, you know, they've passed them along to us.
Wow.
We've actually got like, I guess, 2-3 projects like that.
Wow. And that's a huge compliment.
Yeah, so
I mean,
White Balance was like that. Like, yeah. So Madhav Raman knew the client and he was like, you know, why don't you guys talk to them? Yeah.
That's like a huge compliment because they themselves are running a studio and they thought that, you know, they could, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so they've been like super great to us, you know, and then things like, you know, so my parents, they're also architects, right?
Yeah.
So they do different kind of work and then sometimes they get inquiries, so they're like, you know, why don't you take it? So it's word of mouth. And then after a while, you just have to start, I guess, figuring out what your target industry could be, you know? So a lot of it is like, now we are at a space where we've got something in each category,
right?
You know, like residential and hospitality and all of that. We've got something to show. And they're all pretty different from each other. So now I'm in a position where I can reach out to people and be like, look at my work. If you have some work, why don't you, like, let's meet and discuss.
Right.
You know, so that's also something that, you know, we can do as architects, you know, like, don't be afraid to just reach out to people you don't know and just be like, you know, I know you guys are building out stuff. Why don't you, you know, use us? Why don't we partner up on some projects? And even if they don't have anything for you at that point, the thing is that most people don't know architects. Like, you know, they go, again, like when a client is like a potential person is looking for a potential architect, they ask people they know. So if someone reaches out to you and they like your work, why wouldn't they call you back?
That's true.
I guess, you know, I think architects are almost scared to like sort of market themselves, you know, but it doesn't hurt to sort of reach out to local businesses and just be like, hey,
Why do you think they're scared to market themselves?
I don't know. Like, I think people just, I don't know if they're scared, but I feel people, like, we don't do it enough.
Yeah.
We showcase our work,
yeah,
you know, but I feel like regular people don't understand the kind of language we speak.
Yeah. I think that barrier hasn't been broken properly.
Like, we need to speak in normal person's language, like in layman's language. And that hasn't happened yet. You know, like when we look at a space, you talk about, the program and, you know, all of like the multidisciplinary work that happened, people don't get that.
That's enough to kind of throw them off and be like, we're not interested.
And you know, even magazines like Arc Digest or El Decor or something, like, I had a friend who's a journalist, right? She's educated in like writing, and she opened up one of these magazines, she couldn't understand what was happening. So like, this is someone who's literally, like, her job is to write and, you know, make sure that her work is, you know, understood by everyone.
Yeah.
And she couldn't understand like a magazine like that, like a design focused magazine.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's really like screwed up.
That,
you know,
is,
you need to talk in the language that people understand.
Yeah, tone down the vocabulary maybe, you know.
And it's really funny because, you know, I remember like a year ago, maybe more, we were looking into how to get a website up and running, and I was like, for reference, let me look at, you know, all the big firms in Delhi. And, you know, and all of them were like, we are a multidisciplinary practice aimed at creating design-focused spaces. Some version of that line. And I was like, wow, that's great. That is super great, guys. Like, but what does that mean?
Like, I know, it's very vague and ambitious. I'm sorry, not ambitious, like ambiguous. Because I think it's only when you're an architect, like a practicing architect, do you kind of understand what they're really getting at when they say multidisciplinary. Means that we're not focused on like just one kind of space, just building hotels or just building office spaces. Yeah. We do other things as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, that's why, you know, companies like, you know, the new companies that have come into the market, like all, you know, LiveSpace and Mansion and all the, that's why they're succeeding, because they're talking in the way that people understand.
Right.
You know, they're not saying that, oh, get your residence designed and, you know, in like the latest whatever. They're saying, talk about your living room, get the best kind of soap. Like, they're dumbing it down. Like, that's a bad way to say it, but they're literally bringing it down or bringing it to the level of the consumer, the average consumer.
Yeah.
And they're doing like, they've got like decent projects.
That's true. I mean, also, I like the part where you mentioned the magazines that talk about architecture. Mm-hmm. And I feel that when you mentioned magazines, the only thing that I had in mind, and it just came up into my head, was those nice flashy magazines. Like, and I just cannot relate to it. And I think architecture magazines are doing that. I mean, the well-known ones that are available on, you know, bookstore ke newsstands ke upar and all of that, they just don't get down to the things that really matter. Like you just mentioned, you know, design your living room. Like, these are the options you have, you know. Yeah. This is how you can go about it.
And yeah, and obviously as architects, we know there are like literally like tons of ways you can design a living room.
Yeah.
But they don't want to know how smart you are. They just want to know what would work for them, what is trending, what will look good, what will people say when people walk into their house.
Yeah.
Like, you have to think about what people want.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. And market yourself accordingly. Huh. You know, and so like obviously now it's like you have to. So I think the first year, all of our profiles were just completely visual. Right, it was just photos of different projects that we'd done, and really like nicely professionally taken photos, but we never got like a great response from them because people didn't understand.
Yeah, they don't understand those angles. I mean, apart from understanding, it's being able to appreciate the effort that goes into it, the effort that goes into creating that space. And, you know, someone who's from the background would be able to understand that, okay, you know, if you're taking a picture of the ceiling, you know, this is how it's done differently. You know, maybe they recognize that, oh,
like,
this is a false ceiling.
Add some context.
Yeah.
You know, like, say that, okay, fine, if this is, say, the door you've made, right?
Yeah.
Talk about what was it made of, how much time it took to make, what was the cost, something like that. Add some context so they know, okay, fine, this is what I can get.
Huh.
You know, and a regular person who has no experience in construction will have some idea that this is what they can do, because most people, they don't understand all these flashy images, no matter how good they
like. And
they
also
look.
Like context is basic context in terms of scale also. I remember looking at one of your images only where Lokesh was cycling and there were maybe there was a photo shoot going on. I really liked that because, you know, immediately I got a feeling that, you know what, this space is really big.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can drive a cycle comfortably in it, then the scale of this space is something I could understand. And generally, volumetrically also, it gives you some kind of context. Scale,
Definitely. You need to, I think that is where, like, architects still need to learn how to talk to the client. I feel that is something that's missing. Obviously, when you're a bigger client, you know, you can get away with that kind of stuff because people come to you. Like, when you're a bigger firm, people come to you automatically. You already have
because of the name, you know,
reached that level where, you know, developers know who you are, like the big name clients know who you are, they'll come to you.
Right.
But when you're a smaller person, you need to figure out what it is that people will, you know, be attracted to you by.
So if one were to make an effort to kind of really connect with the people that they're serving and the general customer, I think it wouldn't have taken much time. Do you think that's the case?
I don't know what their strategy is.
Yeah.
I can't speak for them, but I know that nowadays, like, if someone is looking for an architect, you know, like, that's what I do. I make it a point to ask people, like, who are not related to the architectural construction industry in any way. If you were to find an architect, how would you do it? And I guess the responses that I've got is, I guess 9 times out of 10, they'd be like, I'll Google it. And the kind of people you get when you Google architects in Gurgaon or architects in Delhi are like people you've never heard of. But they must be getting like so many calls.
Yeah.
Like their projects are like fine, whatever, you know. And then there's some websites on the first and second page. Ek to no one goes beyond the second page also.
I think nobody even scrolls down. I mean,
it's on their phone and, you know, they're just looking. So I think people really need to figure out which medium to go for, because nowadays people, I think, are on their phone. One is, of course, word of mouth. You know, that's how someone would find out, like, someone who's done another friend's place or something. Then they go on House. You know, House is something that everyone does.
I think that's a brilliant place to kind of break that barrier between I am an architect and I'm not an architect and initiate that conversation.
Yeah, because you can find architects, but it also has like a blog. It also has images. So it's kind of like a Pinterest, but with like more information.
Yeah.
So, you know.
With those price tags.
Yeah. So House is like a great app. And like a lot of people who aren't even architects, like, they have that app and they go through it and they're, oh yeah, I want something like this. And they can contact people. I don't know if anyone has actually got a client from there, but you get to know, like it's all about spreading the word.
So are your clients that aware and do they present these kind of images to you?
So I guess most people, they do present because now everyone has Pinterest. Even if they don't have house, Pinterest is like there. Google Images is there.
True.
So people can search on their own and they find something they like and they show it. They show us, hey, this is the reference image. This is the thing we want. So everyone's perception is different. Huh. So you have to sort of keep that in mind and be like, okay, what exactly do you like in this picture? That's another thing that I've learned, you know, like if the client's expectations are something completely different, just say no.
Achha.
Because in the beginning I did that, you know, that if I knew that, so there were these clients, we have different sensibilities, you know,
right.
And they all want different things. So they wanted something, you know, and I was like, okay, I guess I know it's not my style, but I'll do it. And it didn't work out for anyone because I wasn't able to give them what they wanted. Yeah. I wasn't happy doing it because it wasn't my kind of design.
Yeah.
It just wasn't working out for anyone involved.
So how do you deal? I mean, how do you deal with this part of things? Because I feel that when you start your own venture, you need to manage everything and you're kind of in charge and you're responsible for everything. But there's also this element of vulnerability.
I believe the market is huge. There's the tons of architects. There are literally like tons of architects, the tons of architecture school. The amount of architects this country is churning out is ridiculous. I feel like if you're going to be putting your work out there, it better be something that you're proud of. At the end of the day, that's all that matters. And that's what I learned out of that project, that, you know, I know that I gave my drawings and the work got done on site and the design is like shit. Like, it's not something I would do. But like the next time I'll do something, I'll make sure that my designs are followed and it's the kind of design that I want to do so that I don't mind going to site. You know, agar, you know, he says that, acha, you know, this work is done, can you come like through 2-3 more times? It's okay because I know that I'm proud of it. Like, I don't mind going there. Even if it's like on the other end of the city, I'll go. But you have to be like behind the work you've done, like 100%.
Right.
If you're not even like behind your work, then like they won't trust you. The client won't trust you.
They see conviction in your
eyes. Because so that's, I think that was the main problem. It wasn't that I wasn't confident in the design that I was doing. It was because they saw that I wasn't confident. You know? Like some people can still fake it, you know, like they can still say that, acha, I know this is shit, but I'm doing it and sell it. But at that stage, I was so green that I couldn't even sell it. And they saw that.
Okay.
And that is why, you know, the aggressiveness doesn't come out of nowhere. So I was also at fault in a way. I mean, they sort of took it to the next level, but, you know, it didn't come out of nowhere.
So you recognize that thing that was lacking and...
And now if I'd been in the same position and, you know, I saw, I mean, the clients had told me that we want this kind of space and everything, I would have just, I mean, now, I mean, I'm just saying it, but I don't know what would actually happen. But I would say that this is the kind of work that I do. And if you want to do something like this, like, I know this is good design, everyone would be super impressed by if that's what you want. And, you know, so if you want to do it, you do it. Otherwise, it's not going to happen.
But it's also, I think, about luxury of choice. I mean, initially, when you guys started, I mean, I'm sure that wasn't the case, right?
Yeah. So that's why I took on the project. You know, that's how you learn, I guess.
Yeah. So now, would you say that you're in a comfortable position where you have the luxury of choice? You will take on projects that you completely believe in and you feel that you can convert into something that you'll be proud of.
Yeah, now we're at a place where we have some, you know, work to show. So, you know, we can go to people and even if clients come to us, you can say like, this is the kind of work we do.
Yeah.
And it's not, and we're willing to sort of, you know, be flexible. Like if you have something in mind, we're willing to do that. So we have something that is like, you know, projects that are like super modern. We have projects that are like, you know, rustic and industrial. And we have projects that we're doing which are like classic and everything. So we have something in each style, but we do it in our own way. So it's not like we're saying that this is the kind of style that we're going to do. We're just saying that we know what will go well with whatever your brief is.
Right.
So you have to be like open with us and sort of trust us. You know, so if you're willing to do that and this is our work, if you trust that, then, you know, let's work together. But
so last thing after this, we'll wrap up. Do you think that now that you're, I think, a little over 2 years old, the firm, do you think now is the right time to kind of take on the projects that would add to your portfolio?
I think where the stage that we are, I was just talking about it to someone actually the other day. She's not an architect, but she's a journalist, like I said. And we're both feeling very, you know, like we're feeling like very unmotivated. And we were just like, you know, oh no, like big things aren't happening. You know, what do we do? And, you know,
I think the first big thing would have been you started.
Yeah, we
then
started.
The enthusiastic.
Then we did our first project. Sustains, then we got published.
Yeah.
You know, so there were like a few big things that happened. And then for the last few months, there's been a lull. right? And we don't foresee that changing. So it's like now we're in a stage where we just have to do the grind.
Right.
You know, for the next few years, it's just about grinding down and working hard, doing whatever comes your way, in the way that you like it. And it's just, you know, keep working every day and hope that something happens. Blind faith in the universe.
That's nice. That's a nice way to go about things. My question was actually about the kind of choices and the way you're making it. For example, if someone were to listen to this and they do start a firm and 2 years down the line, you know, it's just, I think, one direction that a firm takes that, you know, now we've decided to take on projects that would add to the diversity of our work. And if, for example, if you've done a school before, you've done 2-3 schools before, would you now take up a school again, or would you rather prefer, you know, a project that you've never done before, like, for example, like working space, hypothetically?
Oh, I get that. I guess, I don't know, I think right now we're still trying to figure out what we like, you know. I think we're too young to sort of make that call.
Acha.
You know, because we haven't done enough projects. We've done like maybe 2 or 3 of each kind.
Okay.
But we're still like too early to sort of make that call key. This is the kind of work we want to do, and this is the kind of work we don't want to do anymore.
So would you say that you're still exploring?
Yeah, we're
your
still
style?
Exploring. We're still seeing what comes our way. You know, we're like doing pitches for like educational stuff. We're doing pitches for, you know, like F&B stuff, and we're just really open to what's happening right now. And I guess maybe like 2-3 years down the line, maybe 5 years down the line, when we're in a better place and we know what kind of projects we like and what kind of projects we don't, then we can sort of say that, okay. Because there are firms, like you said, who specialize in a certain kind of project.
And they create that niche for themselves, that niche. In the market.
And they specialize in that, and everyone knows that this is what they excel at. Yeah. But then when they do something else, it doesn't sit right. Like somehow there's something
that's
missing.
That's true.
I think we're still too young. I think I think even if you look at, you know, most of the firms, like, you know, there are firms who are specializing in F&B, right? But it took them like years to get to that point. So I think that's what we need to. We need to have a sense of perspective that is going to take you 5 years minimum to get anywhere and 10 years where you can call yourself an expert.
Right.
So you just have to keep reminding yourself of that every day. Be patient and just see what happens.
So did you make a roadmap for yourself?
No. Now that I'm thinking it, like, have other people done that? Should I do it? You know, so like I said, my parents are architects, right? So I have something to sort of draw experience from. So like what they did was, like, you know, you just have to keep working, and it happens like slowly. You know, you can't really figure out where it's going to go. So like my parents' firm started out doing residences, right? And like they did high-end residences for like years, like 10 years before they finally got into like their infrastructure projects.
Right.
You know, and now they're doing like, they're doing metro stations, and they're doing like the bullet train project in Gujarat. So like from residences, they went to that. So you can never really predict, and you can make a plan, but, you know, plans are plans. Like, it might happen, might not.
Yeah.
And most of them don't.
Most of them don't,
So I guess, you know, you just keep working and you just see what happens. Be open to everything. And, you know, just have faith that it'll work out, hopefully.
So lastly, I just got curious. I mean, when you were talking about trying out different things, there's this, I mean, there's another guest who mentioned this, that, you know, they keep their entity fluid in the sense that if they have their entity A, it's not a standalone thing. It's a space where people come in and go out. Like, do you think that format works with another architect or another studio that you think is doing nice work, and your, you know, your work, that your design and their design would complement each other? Do you think that's something that can be done, or
I don't know, because, you know, architects are very personal about their designs, you know, very protective. So I don't know if, you know, but I guess it's all about the connection. If you have that connection with a fellow designer or like maybe someone else, you know, and you want to do something with them, then why not? You know, and again, it's a new experience. So if you're open to trying it out and seeing how it works out, I mean, that's how good things happen.
I think we're done.
Oh, yay.
Do you want to give our listeners a little parting message?
Hopefully bigger and better things will happen. So
they will definitely happen.
Keep at it, guys. Keep at it.
All right. Thanks, Anjana, again for coming in.
Thank you. This was fun.
This is a lot of fun.
This is intense. Like, I'm examining my life now. Like, do I need to make a 5-year plan? I'm still on that. God.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening, and tune in next week when we have a new and exciting episode and we talk to more architects. Bye-bye.